Welcome to the DL.
Hello, friends. That was great. Come on. No, neither of you laughed. You're so professional, the two of you. Shane Bacon, Jay Busby, Jim Nantz. We're here at the Masters. As much as I always say, the U.S. Open is my favorite golf tournament. For some reason, the Masters week, the build-up to it, watching foliage, is my favorite week of golf, and I'm glad to have both of you on for this.
Shane, do you or I get to play the Johnny Miller role and just tell Dan how much better it is when we're doing this kind of thing?
Exactly right. I think right now Dan's momentum's a little low.
Yes. No, we're not getting to that. We have the PGA Tour has just given us all a gift, given golf fans a gift with their 2011 Masters momentum level, and we will break that down in a minute. But before we get to that, I need to take the opportunity to thank you guys for coming on. Obviously, this is a big week for anybody who writes golf, who follows golf. Also a big week for anyone who Shane Bacon doesn't pick. Because you have the worst track record ever of picking winners. So I'm just going to assume that who you don't pick, whoever you omit, is going to win this tournament. A la Phil Mickelson not having a great year. He goes out and wins last week.
I love it. I love it. I actually, your tweet just made me laugh. I try to pick the people I think are going to do well. And I'm about 0 for the world. But, you know, maybe it'll change this week. I don't know. I think I picked Anthony Kim. So. He'll probably break his leg on 14 the first day or something. Who knows?
That's a terrible thing to say. Do you want to get right into who we think is going to win and then break down the whole field, or do you want to go into who has the most momentum first?
let's hit the winners. You know, let's start with the winners. Let's start with who we think is going to win, and we'll go from there. So, Shane over at Devil Ball, Shane and I do this showdown. It was called Suicide Showdown, and we decided that was a little brutal, so we just called it a showdown, where it's basically like a football suicide pool, and we pick one golfer every week, and we can't. Once you burn that guy, he's gone.
Oh, wow.
And so once we get to week 36, it's going to be, you know, Arjun Atwal versus Retief Goosen or whatever. But Shane, you picked Kim this week, and I picked Phil Mickelson. So explain your reasoning, sir.
Well, to be fair, I burned like two of my picks already that I would have liked to use. I like Kuchar a lot this week, and I like Bubba a lot this week, but I've used both of them. But, I mean, Kim's played well. He played well last week. He played well here last year. What I like about Anthony Kim and your pick, who is Phil Mickelson, is they're very similar in the sense that you never know at all what golfer you're going to get week in and week out. But, I mean, any momentum he has coming into this event, obviously he's got a lot of good memories here, and he tends to make a lot of birdies when he gets to Augusta. I think Kim could play well. I mean, I also think Kim could miss the cut. Like, what do I know?
Well, he's played well the last 2 years. I want to ask you, Jay, before we get to yours, how much does Masters history matter? Because the guys you mentioned, other than Anthony Kim, do not have any history at the Masters. Bubba Watson's played there twice. I think he missed the cut with both times, or at least one. Matt Kuchar played 4 times in his career. I'm looking at he played last year and didn't play since 2002 before that. He finished 24th last year. I mean, he has no history at this tournament. So are you just picking guys that are hot, or do you have to have any sort of pedigree at the Masters?
Well, I'm wondering myself about that. I always wonder. That's kind of the question about how much the World Series and how much the Super Bowl actually means to the guys who are playing it versus how much we impress upon it. I mean, if you sit and listen to Jim Nantz, as your wonderful impression showed at the beginning of the show,
yeah,
I mean,
thanks.
This is church. This is a week of church for all of us. You know, we're going in or synagogue to be non-denominational.
It's in Atlanta, Georgia. I don't think it's church, or it's in Augusta, Georgia. This is not synagogue. This is clearly church.
This is true. This is true.
But, is there a synagogue in the greater Augusta area? I don't believe that there would be one.
If there is, they probably serve In-N-Out burgers at it. It is not – once you get outside – that's the thing. Once you get outside – actually, they wouldn't serve In-N-Out because that's not in the East Coast. But once you get outside of Augusta, Augusta itself is just a crappy little town. I mean, and my apologies to anyone who lives there, but the town revolves around the National, and even across the street it's a mess. But that's a whole different story. I wonder – how much the players themselves, obviously it means a great deal to them. Obviously this is what they've fought for and they've hoped for their entire lives. But once they're in the midst of it, I always wonder how much some players do get crushed by it, but some others, you know, like Dustin Johnson, that guy doesn't seem to have a nerve in his body. He seems to, he's gone and had two complete major blow-ups in the last year. And yet I still think he's a really good pick to win this year just because it doesn't affect him the way that it does, you know, most of the other golfers.
That being said you picked Phil Mickelson. And it, look, if you're going to pick somebody, I mean, we're going to do this in a second, because every year my mom's high school does a master's pool, and every year she asks me, and every year I ask you, and every year we lose. So this year we're going to fix that. And I think that the way that we're going to fix this is by going with Phil Mickelson, because even if he doesn't win, look at this guy's record at this tournament. I mean, right. He's missed one cut that he's ever played. He has – his first two times he was there, he finished in the 30s and 40s. And since then, he's finished in the top 12 every year but 2007. I mean, it's incredible. He has, what, more top fives than most of the field has cuts. It's incredible. So even if you don't – even if you think he was having a bad year up until last week when you said, hey, look, I'm ready for the Masters, everybody – it's impossible to pick against him, even if he was swinging right-handed, I think.
Yeah, he gears his game to this. He gears his mind to this. His entire year is worked around Augusta. So, yeah, that's what I went with him. I mean, he's a safe pick. You know, you rarely say that about Phil, and that he's a safe pick, because he'll always do something just boneheaded to screw things up. But at Augusta, it seems like he's got another gear. It seems like he thinks a little bit more. It seems like the shots, like the ridiculous one on 13 last year, they pay off for him. So, yeah, I think that your mother would have a good pick by picking Phil.
All right, so, Shane, I want to ask you the question that Busby answered before. I mean, how much does and not even the aura. I mean, Jay, you answered it more about the mystique of the Masters. But from a logistical standpoint, from knowing where the pins are going to be, from knowing where to set your shot up, those fairways are sideways. You know, sometimes, I mean, the hills on those fairways are ridiculous. You can't see any pins. So from a logistical standpoint, how much does it benefit guys who have a track record at that course?
Well, two things. First, Jay, there's three synagogues in Augusta. I just looked it up. There's three. So
look at you.
I know. But and Dan, I got to correct you. You said Kuchar has no history at Augusta. I mean, Kuchar burst on the scene at Augusta as an amateur. I mean, he finished 21st.
That's fair. Okay, that's fair.
And I mean, you know, obviously it was a long time ago, but if you're talking about pulling good memories from somewhere, when he shows up, I mean, that's always got to be on his mind. You know, this is the place where I kind of broke out of my shell and became somebody that everybody rooted for and wanted to see do well. But obviously the more you play there, the more you're going to be comfortable with the greens and the fairways. And I was reading a story about how when Tiger first got there in 96, he played with Ben Crenshaw in a practice round and putted. From everywhere Crenshaw putted from, Tiger would put a ball down and putt from the same place and watch what Crenshaw's ball did and then see what his ball did. And I think that to get around this golf course, you have to obviously know, a little bit about the golf course and what it's going to do. But, I mean, it's going to take a little bit of time to totally understand those greens. I mean, like Nicholas did in 86. I mean, he had a putt on 17 that most people would misread, but he's played there so much he kind of understood it. I think that it really does come down to who's hitting the ball the best, who's making the putts. But it obviously helps if you've been there for a long time and if you know exactly what you're going to do here or there, what kind of shot you have to hit on this hole or where you can't miss it on this hole. And I think that's why you don't see a lot of first and second year guys do really well at Augusta, because it takes a while to get comfortable. Plus, you're playing Augusta National. I mean, no matter who you are, if you're worth $50 billion, if you make no money at all, if you're standing on the first tee at Augusta National, you're going to be nervous, even if you're a professional golfer, because obviously for 25 years of your life before you made it on the tour, this is the place you've wanted to play.
Right. And by the way, to clean up what I said earlier, I think I said Bob Watson didn't make a cut if it was him that I mentioned. He actually finished 20th in 2008 and 42nd last year, so not terrible. I mean, right, 20th is actually, you know, pretty damn good for a tournament like this. 42nd is right in the middle of the pack. But it just – guys like that scare me. I wrote something last year, which inexplicably you can still find on SB Nation, which I find so hilarious, for Sporting Blog, that showed none of the young guns can win. That seven players ever under the age of 25 won this tournament, and four under the age of 24 years old. And I think a couple guys may have done it more than once at, you know, under that age, but from total individuals. So it may have happened more times than that, but from total individuals, it's only been seven guys under the age of 25. So while everyone wants to talk about these young guns every year and the future of golf, this probably isn't the tournament that are going to win. Am I right on that, Busby?
Yeah, I would think so. And what I was going to follow up with Shane's point there, Phil has already visited the course like three or four times this year. Every time that he's on anywhere on the East Coast, he swings by Augusta and he goes and he walks the greens, he walks the fairways, he sees what's going on, he sees how the course is changing, and he understands that dynamic. And that fits in with that. When you're younger, you don't have either the opportunity or the knowledge or the understanding that you should do that. Once you get older, you've been around the course. As Shane said, you've been on the course. You know how the greens roll, and you have a much better sense of what Augusta demands of you. But yeah, I think that your point is well taken. That the younger guys, they can. You never want to say luck into a win. They might be able to pull off a win, but you can't just bulldog your way into a win the way you could at a lesser course.
And I think that the odds, I'm looking at Bodog, but I think the odds are sort of illustrating that. I mean, if you look at the numbers, Phil's number one, and everyone's making a big deal about how Tiger Woods is not the Masters favorite, which stands to reason. I mean, at this point, it seems ridiculous that it's a story. It seems ridiculous that people are making that a story. I mean, Tiger answered the other day and said, yeah, right. I mean, why would I be?
If you bet money on Tiger to win the Masters, you just have either too much money or hate money. I mean, just send me half of what you're going to bet on Tiger, and then you'll only lose half your money, and I'll at least get a little cash.
But yeah. And by the way, that would be the greatest thing ever. If someone just – I was going to bet $100. Here's 50.
Here's, thank you, Shane Bacon. Thank you for saving me 50.
Listen, it's really funny. So we did this thing on Devil Ball, and it's a contest, and obviously people can still sign up. But basically what you do is we're just picking one person every major, and whoever finishes the most under par over the four majors – you know, wins a driver from TaylorMade and one of those R11 drivers. And it was 55 people signed up before one person picked Tiger. And I feel like that's a pretty good indication. I mean, that would have never, ever been the case. You know, everybody would have picked Tiger no matter what the deal was. But for just regular people that are playing in a contest to not pick Tiger after, you know, like I said, I mean, 55 regular people that might not know a ton about golf, not picking Tiger to win because he's such a big name, really shows kind of where his game's at, in my opinion.
Right, but that's also very interesting because you're not picking who's going to win. You're picking who's going to have the best overall score over the course of four separate tournaments. I would think that he might be higher on my list than some other guys. I don't think he's going to win, but again, I think that he knows how to play this course better than anybody. So how can you – just like the same logic with Mickelson – even if Tiger's not playing well, he's going to grind it out. Didn't he play really, really poorly last year and end up in fifth place with 11 under?
Well, he opened really well, and then he just could never really get it going after that first round. Because like last year was the first time he ever broke 70 in the first round. But, I mean, you know, he's Tiger. When he gets to Augusta, I mean, the memories are going to come back. He's probably going to, like, he's probably going to have one round. But as Jay and I have talked about over and over again, it just doesn't seem like Tiger's golf game is able to go four rounds without a bad round. And and Jay wrote that this week when he did his Tiger preview is, if you can't go, I mean, you know, Ian Poulter said it and it was kind of a big deal and we wrote a story and it was kind of blew up, but Ian Poulter said Tiger's not going to finish in the top five and it's not really even a diss. It's kind of what we all think, you know?
Yeah, at this point, Tiger is not capable of putting together four solid rounds at even the lower level courses. But I think that what'll happen is it's kind of the same thing that happened last year. Tiger's going to reel off one round in the 60s on Thursday or Friday. He's going to play really well. Everyone's going to say, oh, here he is. He's in the hunt. And then slowly he's going to slide back again. It's just you can't bring a swing change to Augusta in progress. You can't with the way that his putting game is just such a mess. You can't come to Augusta and just kind of hope that you get a couple of favorable rolls. It's just you've got to be in control of your golf game. And right now he's not.
All right, so Jay, I'll ask you, what does that mean for television? The Masters has it galvanized people enough that who's in it doesn't matter, or does this tournament, with how fickle people are, with it being, you know, potentially a nice weekend, do they need Woods and or Mickelson in at least the final three groups on Sunday for them to get any sort of rating on Sunday? Or is it, I mean, watching the green jacket, whether it's one of the Molinari brothers or Phil Mickelson, it doesn't matter?
Well, I think that it's the latter there. I think that the Masters has hit the point of the Super Bowl where not ratings comparative, but in the sense that you will watch it no matter who is playing well, no matter who's in it. Obviously, you're going to know a few names. You're going to not know a few names. There's going to be somebody that's going to jump up there that the majority of viewers have never even heard of. And it might be one of the Molinaris. It might be someone like that. It might be, you know, Dustin Johnson is not a household name. Luke Donald, not a household name yet. And these guys are some of the best in the world. What I think it could do is serve as kind of an introduction of these guys to the larger world stage, the larger American stage. But, you know, the British Open, the PGA, even to some extent the U.S. Open, those are not as much appointment viewing as the Masters is. So I think it's a little bit invulnerable to Tiger's woes, but certainly if Woods were playing well, it'd be something to watch.
But you bring up Luke Donald, and I have his card open, so I want to ask both of you this, because in my quest to throughout the episode try and figure out who the four golfers, by the way, the rules of this tournament, and I'll read it to you so you guys can think about it, because we'll ask at the end. Pick four golfers who will be competing in the Masters this weekend. The top three scores of golfers you pick will count. If one of your guys doesn't make the cut, you're still alive. So they don't screw you by having to score all four. You get to pick three. The tiebreaker is the winner's total score. So I need to pick four guys, assuming that three are going to at least make the cut. Luke Donald is very high up on the odds. I mean, he's, I want to say, in fifth. He's 25-1, fifth or sixth best odds to win this tournament. Yet if you look at a guy like Luke Donald's history at this tournament, other than 2005 when he finished in third, he finished 10th in 2007, but it was with a +7 when nobody could score that year. And other than that, it's been in the 40s and 50s. Last year, he missed the cut and finished, you know, whatever, 54th place. The year before, 38th. That goes back to the point, I guess, of he's hot now. He's been playing well now, so it almost doesn't matter what his 7-year record at this tournament is.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that a guy that's running well at this point is someone that you want to keep an eye on. But we could get all detailed about how to.
I just did.
Players were. No, I mean, I'm talking about in terms of statistics of keeping the greens and regulations and keeping the book and that kind of nonsense. And that is useful to some extent. But yeah, I mean, if you're feeling good, if you're playing well, Augusta has a way of kind of leveling everybody out. But the more momentum that you're coming in with, the better off you're going to be.
All right. That's a good point. Let me ask Shane about that, because obviously you've played it at a collegiate level. And I don't mean to diss Busby's golf game at all. But Shane, I think you have a little bit more experience on the actual course. We've banged heads on this show a lot between, and K-Duck and I talk about this all the time, with looking at a baseball field and seeing something happening and then comparing that to what the numbers tell you. And then there's this saber versus sight type of fight. Does that exist in golf yet? You sent me that link the other day where one of the caddies was talking about his time. And I guess one of the stories that he was telling was Jack Nicklaus was the first guy to use yardages. Everyone just did it by eye. That seems so far in the past now. I mean, has the game gotten to the point where we actually should be figuring out everyone's green and reg, everyone's driving percentages and distances to determine who's going to win this? Or is it still who's hot going in?
I think it's more who's hot going in over anything. With that said, I mean, if you would have told me last year before the Masters started that Phil Mickelson was going to win, I would have told you were crazy. I mean,
you did that. That's exactly what happened.
And he was having as bad a year going into it as he's ever had, and he didn't look like he was anywhere close. But it's kind of like we said, he focuses his entire year around Augusta, and if he can win there, it's a good year for him. But I think it's who's hot going in. I also think it's about how these guys approach and play major championships. You're talking about a guy like Luke Donald. For all the acclaim we give him, how good he hits the golf ball, how he hits his irons, you know, how good of a putter he is. I mean, the guy's got four top tens in major history, you know. I mean, two of them were at the Masters, but it's not like he's gone out and lit up. He's kind of like Adam Scott in that sense, where he's a big name that people know, but he's never really done much at the major championships. And I think that's something you have to take in. I mean, do these guys get too nervous? Are they... Can they not really handle the pressure of majors? Is the golf course set up a little too tough for him? You know, he's only had one win in his career before the Masters, and that was in 06, and he finished 42nd. So is there something to be said because he won in February at the match play? Probably not. Do I think he could go in and play well? Absolutely. He's got that game. But I feel like when these guys come in with momentum, they play differently, unless there's somebody like Mickelson. And I also think that it depends on player to player. Like somebody like Tiger, I just don't see Tiger playing well this week, mainly because he has absolutely nothing he's been able to build on. You know, he can tell us all the time about swing changes, and John Cook can come on and quote how he's hitting it great at the range. I know a lot of guys that hit it really good at the range that can't hit it worth a hoot on the golf course. So
I'm good at the range.
Yeah, Busby's one of my favorite range players, you know. So it's momentum. I mean, I think, you know, if you're going to look at stats and try to do something like sabermetrics, I mean, it does help if you hit the ball far here. I just wrote a story about how it helps if you can move the ball right to left, like somebody like Dustin Johnson or Bubba Watson. But, you know, when it comes down to it, it's just who's making the putts, who's getting the breaks, who's hitting it out of the pine straw from 213 with a 6-iron in it, land over the creek by one yard.
By the way, you keep bringing up momentum. You just keep teasing and teasing and teasing this PGAtour.com article, which we're going to get to in 1 second. But you brought up the fact that somebody who can move the ball from right to left. And I wanted to ask this anyway, and I decided not to. But now that you brought it up, you've opened the door again. Is this tournament easier for a lefty to win than other tournaments? And is it easier for a lefty to manage this course than somebody who bombs the ball from the right side?
Well, I mean, I just literally 5 minutes before we started, I just published a story on dogs that chase cars about how this golf course is a left-handed golf course. I mean, you know, if you can move the ball right to left and let it land soft, as we all know, a cut is a lot easier to control. It lands softer, doesn't get away from you as much. And, you know, I mean, it's the reason that Trevino never won here, because Trevino couldn't move the ball right to left. And, you know, he just never played Augusta well. And if you can go into it with that mentality, and that's the thing, like, it's easy to say a lefty's good. I mean, they've won 4 of the last 8 majors. I mean, Masters, and that mainly because of Mickelson. But somebody like Dustin Johnson, I mean, you can't forget the fact that he hits a draw with his driver every time, and he hits the ball really far. So he's somebody you have to look at as well, because if he's hitting his driver well, he's going to be in the fairway really far down it, and he's going to be at a huge advantage off every tee than anybody else. So I think that being a lefty does give you an advantage at Augusta, and I think being a left-hander that controls their cut like Bubba Watson does is somebody you really have to say is a favorite here. But, I mean, it all comes down to putting on the greens anyway, you know.
Right. Jay, let me ask you this, because obviously this is going to be a fun thing for you guys to cover. And doing stuff at Devil Ball Golf, you're not necessarily beholden to here's who scored well and here's who's got the momentum, which, again, we'll get to in a second. You can do fun stuff. In doing that, sometimes you get trapped into fun stuff that's stupid. How do you balance what are you guys going to write about this week that has the respect for the tournament and doesn't get you guys banned forever?
That's a good question, because it's something that we grapple with, and a lot of times when we watch in the tournament, like last year when Phil had that putt and he hit that little piece of pollen fell off, and you remember it knocked his putt offline. We got that one, and we put a post up on that, and we had it up. I screencapped it off the TV, and we had it up there within just a couple of minutes of it happening. And you have these little ridiculous moments. I think that's the great part about having the opportunity to cover the Masters as something that unfolds rather than as a game, because you've got a single game. You've got these 4 days of all kinds of bizarre stuff happening, and you can drop them in there. Generally, there's not a whole lot that I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I can't think of anything that really necessarily disrespects Augusta National itself. You know, there hasn't been any major issue like that in the last few years. There was the plane last year with the drag the Tiger Woods banner. You remember that the FAA
right.
brought that guy down, which was a fascinating story in itself. They went and busted this guy for an allegedly loose seat belt, and they sent him on his way and told him he had to fly back to Ohio or wherever. And you know, if you think that the Augusta National forefathers didn't have anything to do with that, you know, that's exactly what happened. But don't have to do the minute-by-minute updates, which is nice, but we can look at the larger picture, and we will do things like, looks like Phil's making a charge now. Tiger's played well. We'll do mid-round posts, but generally we try to get it to be a little bit broader. But yeah, there are so many little absurd moments that happen that are worthy of a post, even if people only see them for a few minutes and move on. It's still – there are so little things that happen in the game of golf. When you got 99 guys on a golf course playing 4 rounds, obviously there's going to be some bizarre things going on.
Wasn't there a bug issue 1 year? That sort of became like a taboo for people to cover. The reporters who were there on site were complaining, and then it became like, stop talking about this or you won't be here to complain about it. I could be making
well,
that
there's
up. Maybe I'm making that up.
Yeah. You're breaking up a little bit.
I'm breaking up. I said I was making it up.
No, I'm saying you're – yeah, if you can hear me. But anyway, yeah, there have been obviously the famous issues about people saying that the greens were bikini waxed or that they look like body bags, the mounds do, and things like that. And all of the patrons were called the unruly mob. Various announcers have been disciplined. But I think that Augusta is making its steps forward. And Shane pointed this out earlier this week. I'll turn it over to him in a second. But the way that Augusta is really making steps forward to move into the 21st century, and one of the ways that they've done it is this online ticketing for 2012, and I think they're making steps in the right direction to distance themselves from that kind of autocratic mentality that they've had before.
Right, and Shane, I'll ask you that, because we talked about it last time you were on the show with regard to the video game. I mean, this is not your parents' Masters. This is they're showing people on the range on Tuesday and Wednesday. They're showing us every single press conference on their website. They're showing the par three and every shot almost of every hole, it seems, throughout the course of the tournament. This is stuff that we never got when we were kids. And the generation before that, the Masters starts in the back nine on Sunday because that's all you ever saw. How much have they embraced technology to the benefit of all of us?
Well, it's completely different. You know, I mean, it's like you said, they're showing every shot. They're doing all this stuff to make it more fun to watch. I mean, you know, tomorrow morning, I mean, I'll log on in the morning and start watching golf on the computer before it comes on TV. I mean, you know, you're talking about, I was talking to my dad this week about the Masters and you know, talking to him about Nicklaus in 86, just to try to get kind of his thoughts on it. Cause I was going to write something about it. And, you know, he was telling me, you know, I mean, they turned the TV on and they didn't even see Nicklaus make birdie on nine, you know? So, right. I mean, he starts this historic run with six birdies and an eagle over 10 holes. And, you know, he didn't even know that was happening till really they got to 10 and he made that long putt from the front of the green. But it's great. I honestly, even 5 years ago, I never thought they would ever get like this. I thought that it was always going to be the golf tournament where they had jurisdiction. They don't care what anybody thinks. I love the fact that the prices are still the same at the concession stands. And even though they run out of pimento cheese, that, you know, that you can go there and spend $15 and have a good buzz and get a couple sandwiches. I mean, it really is something that everybody should do. I mean, even if they hate golf, just because it's so different. It's so unique, yet it's just as beautiful as it gets. And I mean, you know, every time Master Week rolls around, I mean, you know, you could just kind of feel it with golf fans and stuff, that it's just an exciting time.
All right, on that, I crack my knuckles and let's pick a foursome. And let's go with PGAtour.com's momentum level, because this is the greatest article of the week. I'm sorry. No offense to anything you guys wrote. Mike McAllister, PGAtour.com managing editor, put together every single golfer's level of momentum. I can't even say level of momentum going into this tournament based on high, medium, and low. So, would you pick Aaron Baddeley, who has high momentum, over Anthony Kim, who has low momentum? I mean, is this how we can pick our foursome?
I'm looking right here, and I am thinking that I'm going to take Gregory Havre, even though he has low momentum. Anders Hansen is at high momentum. I mean, it's completely pulled out of a hat, but that's great. You know, who's going to check you on this? Who's going to go back after it's all over and say, oh, you know what? You had him as listed as high, but I think he was only at medium momentum.
I'm totally doing that. I'm totally going through this on Monday.
That would be great. See how they finish. How's Marco Mira? Marco Mira's right there at medium. I love it because of how he's played on the Champions Tour. That's great. This is great.
But Sandy Lyle. Oh, poor Sandy Lyle.
Gary Woodland.
Oh, Sandy Lyle's high. Wow, look at this. Sandy Lyle, high.
Gary Woodland has higher momentum than Tiger or Lee Westwood.
This is the great. Ian Poulter. Ian Poulter played better at Bay Hill, but still couldn't break 70. Low momentum coming in. But Justin Rose, two top fives and two tour starts. Rory Sabatini, this is so great. This is just like, honestly, if there was a three-sided coin, you could flip it for some of these guys.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if we're talking about four people to pick, I think we can all agree that Mickelson would be one of them.
Yes.
And I think that if we're going to lean towards, I mean, it depends on if we're going to go with the theory that we need to pick older people or younger people. But I'm kind of with Jay on the fact that I like Dustin just to play well. I mean, he just seems like he knows how to play these majors now. And so, I mean, I don't hate Dustin Johnson, and I kind of have a soft spot for Kuchar. But, I mean, Jay, do you have anybody you want to throw out?
Yeah, I'd throw in Graham McDowell, too, because Shane did a piece earlier this week on McDowell, and the dude is cold-blooded. I mean, you don't know a whole lot about him, but he hasn't played particularly well this year, but he played unbelievably well at the U.S. Open, and then he ran down and stared down Tiger in December at the Chevron. So McDowell is another guy that you don't worry about what's going on inside his head. As long as he's hitting the ball well, you know, he's going to be perfectly mentally steady.
I like that pick as well. Obviously, Phil, now here's some guys' names that we have not mentioned in this entire conversation, who are on the top of the Bulldog list: Lee Westwood, Nick Watney, Martin Keimer, Paul Casey, Rory McIlroy. And these are all guys listed and with Luke Donald, Tiger Woods, and Phil Mickelson ahead of Dustin Johnson. Patrick Harrington, Hunter Mahan. These are guys that we haven't mentioned. I mean, are these guys, are any of them going to be putting on a jacket this weekend?
Well, I'll take Westwood because he's always kind of a whipping boy for us. You know, he's sort of the dude that was when musical chairs was going on and Tiger had owned it. He just Westwood just happened to be the guy that was sitting in the chair when Tiger, you know, wandered out of the room and chased one of his Perkins waitresses. He got very lucky to be right in the right place at the right time. But he's had difficulty winning on the PGA Tour and he's had difficulty winning majors. And he's an exceptional golfer, but he hasn't proven anything. So I think that he's high up because he's had such a good world golf ranking. But I think that that's why his odds are so high. And I don't think that he's as good of a bet this week as he is at other places.
All right, that's fair. I mean, what about Bacon? You're a big Nick Watney guy. I mean, what about guys like him? Keimer obviously has proven that he can win a big tournament. And Paul Casey, everyone seems to be high on right now.
I mean, I like Watney. I guess I could say I like Watney a little bit. I mean, I don't think I love Watney. I'd like to see him play a little bit better in some majors. I mean, he's been in positions before and completely fallen apart. I mean, I would go with some guys that either have played well at Augusta or some guys that have played well in some majors and actually finished well. You know, somebody like Dustin Johnson who almost won a major. You know, obviously besides a rule infraction. So. And I'm totally with Busby on Patty. I mean, I wouldn't pick him to win a major. I might pick Busby to win a major over him right now, but no offense, Jay.
You can send me half of that bet that you're going to put on me.
I will make sure I do that. I mean, you know, Mahan seems a little shaky in these things a little bit too much too. I don't know. I mean, I just feel like you kind of got to go steady. I mean, I like McDowell a lot too. I think McDowell is the kind of guy that could come out and surprise people. He's obviously won majors. I mean, he won the U.S. Open and kind of stared down the stiff of competitions. Do that, you know.
All right. So what if I pick this, Phil Mickelson? I'll go with you guys, and your official pick combined can be Graham McDowell, Dustin Johnson, and Bubba Watson because he made fun of me on Twitter.
Yeah, I like that.
That's a solid foursome.
Two lefties, two righties. I like it.
So that's who I'll go with. And then which one, Shane, which one do you like the best? Because that's how I know who will miss the cut.
I was about to say, which one do I like the best so you can take the opposite?
So Dustin Johnson's going to miss. I apologize to the fans of Dustin Johnson. He will miss the cut this week.
Poor bastard.
I apologize to him, too. I'm sorry to anybody that I picked this week. I apologize to your parents that flew out to Augusta. I'm going to have to send everybody an email.
Thank you guys.
You know that's going to happen, you know, 20 years from now. Somebody's going to be doing a tearful interview, you know, on the back of the green when someone else is putting on the green jacket. If Shane Bacon hadn't picked me, that would be me right now.
I'm going to get the Jim Rome treatment and just get pushed over during an interview.
Exactly.
You should plant somebody in next year's press room and say, Shane Bacon has picked you to win. That has been like the Madden curse of Augusta. How do you feel about being picked by Shane? See if they respond.
Hey, oh, man.
Thank you guys so much for doing this. I appreciate you taking time. I apologize if my microphone's been a little screwy. You both mentioned that. But it sounds good to me because I can't hear myself. So I didn't know. But enjoy the tournament. And man, you better be right, guys.
Absolutely, brother. Try to sit on the winnings.
Tell your mom sorry.
Thanks.